Hey, it's Norm McIver, and you're listening to Tim and Graham on the Six Sense Podcast.
Podcast in less than a week. What's going on? Welcome back to the Six Sense Podcast, everybody. Joining me in studios from the Big Smoke, Tim. What's up, man? Welcome back.
Hey, not too much. How are you doing, Graham? Good to see you again.
Yeah,
I'm liking the Jays cap. Little familiarity.
I'm a little haggard this morning.
Yeah, you look like it.
Yeah,
you got your shirt all half unbuttoned there.
Yep.
Looks like you were out at some fancy cocktail lounge last night.
No, it was the girlfriend's birthday, so I was DD last night, and yeah, I got in late.
A little damage control here and there.
Yeah, I know it. But it was all right. It was
good.
All right.
Good. It wouldn't be a birthday without damage control,
yes.
Now would it?
But yeah, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Some interesting stuff has been happening over the past few days. We were in here last recording on Thursday, actually, and we hit on a number of things. But in the meantime, the whole Andre Peterson Binghamton Senator situation is kind of blown up a little bit.
No kidding. What a surprise that was, eh?
We might have had a hand in helping to spur that.
Yeah, maybe. I think there might be a direct correlation there. But what first of all, what a guy. I mean, you would never expect that from him. He seemed to be so thankful to the Senators organization after they fixed his back and really gave him a chance to succeed. He was taken later in the draft. Clearly they saw something in him that they liked that other teams maybe weren't ready to take a chance on at that stage in the draft. So it was really surprising to me to see a guy of his, of his caliber and someone who has such a positive relationship seemingly publicly with the Senators speak out so illy about the city of Binghamton.
It's, I'm completely empathetic with the player. At this point, because from what I can gather, what was said after the game last night is that Peterson sat with his reporter for an hour. Like, you and I have been on podcasts over the course of an hour. If someone took select quotes from us from any podcast episode, we come off as assholes.
Well, there could be further things from the truth, but yeah, certainly, like, you can certainly make a case if you have a certain angle that you want to attack, and clearly we know that.
But it's what Steph G said in the piece itself, is a lot of these Swedish newspapers have the agenda,
yep,
wherein they want to crap on the AHL process and that whole process, because they want Swedish players to stay in Sweden and play there.
It's just like the KHL, right, with the Russian papers.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's propaganda.
And it's tabloid journalism. That's what that's what's going to move papers. That's what they want to encourage.
The heaven and the hell.
Yeah, and you want to strengthen your domestic products, right? And obviously, Pettersson had a fantastic World Junior. He was maybe fallen out of the limelight a little bit with his injuries, but clearly a talented guy. You want to see him playing and thriving in Sweden, where maybe he would be, air quote here, more respected in a better living arrangement. But, like, let's be perfectly honest. I've never actually been to the city of Binghamton.
I've been through it briefly, but when I was younger.
I've driven through it on the way to New York City, and, it's not exactly Paris of upstate New York or anything, is it?
No, it's small town upstate New York. That's exactly what it is.
Like, there's a reason that it's home of AHL hockey, right? It's big enough, but, it's certainly not a destination spot on, a road trip across the United States, right? I mean, like they said, it's the Rust Belt. And some of the criticisms were fair. I mean, he based them on fact. The weather sucks. The weather also sucks really bad.
The city's susceptible to flooding.
Yeah, it's like the weather sucks in Ottawa. Winnipeg's susceptible to flooding,
Well, talking even to players, we've talked to players from Binghamton before. They've kind of, maybe not as harsh or as brutally honest as that, but you ask a player, well, what do you like to do at night? I just go out to dinner.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, there's not a lot to do. It's not the nightlife. Right, it's not. It's not going to be a glamorous, glitzy city. I mean, it's a means to an end. You go there, you collect your paycheck, and you hope like hell that you get your call up, like he did.
Perfect example. You and I used to go to a number of Lynx games when they were in town.
Absolutely.
I talked to the out of town players as they're coming in. They loved Ottawa. Why? It's the biggest city that they go to on the whole trip.
Yeah,
and it has the nightlife. It has the people. It has the demographics that young athletes love.
Well, could you imagine doing like a swing where you're coming up from, like, well, I guess Syracuse would probably be okay. They've got the universities.
Yeah.
That's got to be half entertaining. But, like, Norfolk, I mean, a big, like, what are you going to do at night? Go out and fight army guys? Like, naval officers? I mean, I'm sure some of the ball players were into that stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways, but let's beside the point.
Beside the point, Peterson's also a guy who's coming from a European country. Mind you, he speaks very good English. Most Swedish players do. And he's coming to a city, and he's just trying to get it to the NHL.
Yeah.
He's there using that as a stepping stone. That's all it is to him. It's all it is to him. He thought that was the best place for him to develop and get to that next level. And he's doing everything within his power. He's staying there, obviously. He credits Robin Lehner for you know, helping him through some difficult times. And I'm sure it's challenging on him and it's stressful for him. He's not around family or friends, and it's a difficult time for him.
He's a young guy, and it's an adjustment period, right? Like, how many people do you know that went away to school and they were, you know, 18, 19 years old, moved out of the city of Ottawa, only to come back half a year later because they missed everything, right?
And he is not a sure thing prospect.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. Like, he's probably a 50-50 player. He has a skill set, but does he have the rest of the game to get him to that next level?
And is his skill set enough? Because he's not going to be playing. He's going to be wasted. He can't play third or fourth line minutes. Well, he could, but he can't play that role that's expected of third and fourth line players.
You know, he needs those minutes to get on the top lines to produce, yep, to play well.
But some of the other criticisms, like of the of Broome County Memorial Arena, you know, that's perfectly fair. Like, I saw Shane Prince ripping the Civic Center on Twitter the other
day.
Good
point. I was just about to hit on that too, yeah.
Because the roof was leaking. I mean, that's completely fair. Does that mean Shane Prince hates Ottawa? No, not at all. Right? Like, the guy clearly loves the city. He couldn't be, when we spoke to him, couldn't be any more happy about staying, you know, potentially staying in the city playing professional hockey. But just because you hate the arena doesn't mean, you know, the whole city's crap or anything. And that's fair. If the rink sucks and you hear it from other players as well, maybe that's a cue to the people who take care of the ice, who do the maintenance inside of it, to maybe take a little more pride in what they're doing.
And you kind of mentioned this off the top. You compared it to the Winnipeg and the NHL, and that was the AHL equivalent. But it happens at every level of sports. Like, small market areas that aren't necessarily in the best cities, there's a less chance the players want to go there. That's human nature. You want to play in the most grandiose setting that's more comfortable and in line with your own personal needs.
Yeah, like, look at the NBA, right? I mean, that couldn't be... That's just the best example of players not wanting to play in places like, you know, Cleveland or Minnesota. Well, I mean, to be fair, why would you? If you're used to the big glitzy...
Yeah, all money being equal. Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Like, why not go to Miami? Why not go to Los Angeles? Why not go to New York City to play? And we were talking about this earlier, just in passing.
Yep.
About some of the baseball stuff again.
Yep.
Like, even we're talking about the movie Major League, playing in front of desolate crowds, and you know all those members of the tribe were just, you know, fingers crossed, waiting for their payday so they could move to the Yankees, right? Or to move to Boston.
Even the Prospect movie that was over recently, Sugar.
Yep.
Fantastic movie on what it takes for, I believe he was Dominican.
Yep.
And what some of those players have to go through to get to the major league level. And it's just, empathy for them.
And what happens to the ones who don't even make it, right? It's part of the process, though, right?
Absolutely.
That's what you have to do. It's a stepping stone. Just like in any industry, you want to, you know, you don't start off being the CEO of any company. You don't start off being the first line center of a hockey team unless you're Jason Spezza and a man in a boys' league, to roughly paraphrase.
Yeah.
Incorrectly.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, so all things considered, Andre Pettersson.
Would you label him as a bad attitude?
No.
I've seen people do that online.
Honest guy. He's got some complaints about the city. He's killing it in the A right now. He got rewarded. He'll probably be given a fair look at training camp next year.
Mm-hmm.
Sens obviously have a lot of faith in his abilities. We'll see what happens, right? I mean, I don't think the guy's a malcontent. I wouldn't be ready to ship this guy out because he says he's not thrilled about it. Right? Like, so what? He was honest.
It's a learning experience.
Sure. Why not? Right? I mean, I could personally care less. It's a great story, I guess. It's interesting to hear someone speak so brutally honest about a town. And I love that comment at the bottom of the article, at the bottom of the blog, saying that Ottawa Tourism should pick up on this and advertise itself as the anti-Binghamton to drive up tourism. I mean, great. I mean, why not, right? I mean, and all those people in Binghamton, I mean, sure, no one likes having their city dumped on. Ottawa's no stranger to that, being the dumping grounds because of the political affiliations. I mean, everywhere you go in the country, you hear about, you know, it's just, you know, it's not the government of Canada. It's Ottawa, right? It's Ottawa. It's the city. It's all part of it. It's all part of the machine that, you know, may or may not work depending on your political affiliations. We're used to having our city dumped on. Danny Heatley has heard us. Alexi Yashin's heard us. Everyone's sensitive about it, right? I mean, I can only imagine the thick skins people in Edmonton and Winnipeg have. You know, Edmonton, obviously, there's a long list of people who have been less than kind.
And Vanderkay might be the next one in Winnipeg.
To the Canadian Metro Siberia.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Anyways, did you want to switch gears a little bit?
Sure, sure.
Jason Spezza is tearing it up. I don't know if you've noticed. I think it's 13 points in his last five games.
I've heard a lot of things about this Jason Spezza character. I was actually coming back this weekend, and they were counting down the top whatever songs, 102 songs on the Edge. And they got to song 19 when I had turned it on, and they were talking, the DJ had mentioned, you know, number 19, it's the number of the star in the Battle of Ontario. So it was nice to hear a little Toronto props to Jason Spezza. But yeah, it's hard not to take notice of a guy who's having a fairly standard issue Jason Spezza season, point of game kind of guy, but he's just really kicked it up into high gear when the team's needed him the most. And I think that's the big difference this year. He's really carrying the team. Like, he's not part of that supporting cast, like, you know, like the B+, A- supporting cast.
He's starting to transcend that, right?
Yeah, like he's the go-to
guy now.
He's
making a ascent up the pecking order.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that for the longest time. He was always the scapegoat. Why aren't we winning? You know?
Yeah, like Scanlon had that great article about...
Roy McGregor had a fantastic article recently, too.
Was that the one that was...
talking about how he went from Jacques Martin's The Boy comment to he is right now, yeah.
Yeah, the whipping boy to hero, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there was another big thing. I got one of those Sportsnet magazines in the mail again.
Oh, did you?
And yeah, there was a big article about Spezza there. But yeah, it's great to see him really, you know, get the accolades that he deserves.
Yeah, from someone else other than Matt Spezza on Twitter. It is perhaps my favorite Twitter account to follow these days. Matt Spezza Twitter account.
Is he still into the vigilante police work? Or is he doing other things now?
No, it's, yeah, I haven't heard too much on that lately. But it's just, he loves his girlfriend. He lets everyone know how lucky he is.
He could have like a wicked, wicked like reality TV show where he's like a rent-a-goalie who fights crime. I mean, I feel like Comedy Central should really be picking up on this.
It's like the Johnny Drama thing that's going on right now.
Shameless meets Entourage. What's the name of that car that talks from the 80s?
Oh,
Knight Rider?
Kid. Yeah, Kid from Knight Rider.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, someone else can put it into motion, but there's your premise. There's your premise. Anyways, back to Jason. When do you think this really started? Was it the All-Star break when all the Sens, you know, had their little heartwarming love fest? And it was all about Alfredson, but still, there's a lot of talk about the other hometown boys.
I think, personally, from my standpoint, I kind of was empathetic for this guy around... It was shortly before the time that Danny Heatley requested his trade, because Spezza was listed as the guy that many within the media community here in town thought he would be the guy to go if Ottawa ever had to make that step. And I'm like, well, wait a second. Danny Heatley, I think, would be my candidate to fucking go. Anyway, so shortly thereafter, a few months later, Heatley was actually had that huge falling out thing, and then Dunbredden started calling him out in the media, and then that spiraled out of control, and he asked for a trade. And from that point, I've always kind of been pro Spezza, and then it came to last year where Ottawa actually started moving all those reputable guys, the favorites within the media itself. And I think that plays a huge role in how the team itself is portrayed to fans, right? Because the media in the city is the lifeline between the fans and the players. And if those players aren't portrayed in a great light, I think it reflects itself in the casual fans here in the town. And when guys like Chris Kelly, who's everybody loved him in town, everybody. I'm not a huge Chris Kelly fan. He's a good player. He's an effective third line player, but
yeah, he did his job.
I would never equate him to being like the face of the franchise or
no,
or
and
anything
if it
of the
is,
sort.
Then you're in serious trouble.
Exactly, and that's why you always kind of laugh when they're like, "Yeah, let's bring Chris Kelly back in free agency next season." You're like, no, "Not really."
Well, it's easier to knock Jason Spezza when he's in a slump than when
Kasper
Stojakovic hasn't
Fisher's,
scored
right?
in 38 games.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
it's just
and same with Mike Fisher, right?
It's the nature of their jobs.
And Mike Fisher's the pretty boy
yeah.
who goes, plays a complete game, hits people. People see him working hard on the ice, and they love him.
yeah, marketable and that kind of...
celebrity wife, the rest of it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, anyways. So that's essentially that was... I think it kind of dates back to that. It's nice to finally see him get maybe not the league-wide recognition that you'd love to see a player like Jason Spezza get for the season that he's actually having and what he means to the city of Ottawa. I think looking back over the past few months, I think looking even at the 2012 All-Star game, I think that was the Daniel Alfredson show.
But people elsewhere were so, outside of Ottawa, were so critical of the Senators being elected to the All-Star game. But when you actually sat back and looked at it and you saw the numbers, like obviously Erik Karlsson's a no-brainer. He obviously deserved to be there.
Alfredson's a sentimental political pick.
And Jason Spezza
deserved to be there more than anyone.
At that time.
Well, except for Karlsson, but yeah.
Yeah, he had the points. Mahalik had tapered off a bit. He still had decent numbers, you know, as you'd expect from a first half Mahalik, right?
Cy Young.
Yeah, exactly. But it's what he does best. It's what he does. Sure, why not get him into the All-Star game? But Jason really deserved to be there. Based on his numbers, regardless of the fact that he was the center of that line. And it was great. I think it's really good to see him being thrust into this new tier of Canadian hockey star. Like, even we were reading earlier about the Ottawa Sun, or the, I guess it was the Toronto Sun, had an article about potential forwards and for the 2014 Olympics in Russia. And sure enough, who was on that list? Jason Spezza.
Mike Fisher's been on those lists before, though. Like...
He is a committed player to the world championship teams. And Jason's been part of, like, he always agrees to play in those tournaments, right?
No, absolutely.
And that shows a good commitment to the program, and hopefully that'll pay off for him before he's too old. Like, this was probably his last chance to play in the Olympics.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, realistically.
Yeah. This is the prime of his career, yeah. He's almost at the age of 30 now.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see Spezza getting props. I know... locally, at least, they've been kicking around his name in Hart Trophy consideration. Do you think any of Ottawa's other players or management types, coaches, are worthy of any consideration?
Oh, I think, without a doubt, the one that sticks out most to me is Paul McLean for the Jack Adams. I don't think that there... Is there anyone else?
Well, there's Hitchcock.
But this team coming out of the season and the expectations, and when you look at the team on paper and the way that the team plays...
Dark Horse is Bruce Boudreau. If he can get the Anaheim Ducks into the playoffs,
that would be something else.
That would be unbelievable.
Yep. But Corey Perry is having, again, his brilliant second half, and maybe he'll be in the Hart Trophy discussion by the end of it.
Yeah, it's 2010-11 Redux, yep, is what it is.
But I really think Paul McLean deserves that award at this point. Erik Karlsson, I think he's probably in the same boat right now as Jason Spezza is for the Hart. I don't really think, I'm not a huge awards guy. I don't think it doesn't really mean too much to me. I would prefer to see team success as opposed to individual success. Like, it's great that they're having fantastic seasons, but just to be in that conversation is enough for me. If Jason Spezza doesn't take home the Hart Trophy, I'll understand.
You're right.
And that's fine. If Erik Karlsson doesn't take home the Norris, that's fine. I'll understand. His defensive game, it is getting better. Yeah. Is it at the same level as some of his the competition?
Right.
Probably not.
I was looking at one of the quotes from Steven Stamkos. I think it was in the Sun, and he was reflecting on the All-Star game in Ottawa and what he never really realized what Daniel Alfredson meant to the city of Ottawa. And I think that's kind of like the parallel that you'd draw with the seasons that some of these Senators players are having. They're probably, yeah, they're having great seasons, but are they going to get the respect and the votes from across the board for people who don't really have an opportunity to see this upstart team that didn't have those expectations? A lot of people probably haven't watched this team more than once or twice.
And they're a real lunch pail group.
Yeah, exactly.
By and large, too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's out of the top line and that defensive pairing.
But it goes to show you what kind of coverage this team gets around North America. Because if Steven Stamkos doesn't realize what Daniel Alfredson means to this city after, what, like a 13-year career or something? 14-year career?
And he's an Ontario boy, too. I mean...
Yeah.
Chances are you've seen them on Hockey Night in Canada a few times.
Yeah.
Or played with them on, NHL 08 when you were, twiddling your thumbs in Sarnia. But I think the only person, looking back on it, in all of the national media who even gave the Senators a lick of opportunity heading into the season was surprisingly Ron McLean.
And Don Brennan.
Yeah, like, unbelievable. Like, obviously this is a Don Brennan team. I don't see how this team could be any more Don Brennan-esque if he tried. I mean, maybe if we had Luchik on the team. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, why not? It's an easy team to love.
They really were hardworking. I thought there was, I forget who I saw make the prediction. It was in one of the magazines. And they were talking about Ottawa. They're like, I think they're a young team that'll come out really hard for Paul McLean. They'll probably have a good first half, but they'll hit the wall.
McKeon's?
Might have been.
Yeah.
Might have been. And it had that prediction. Like, they'll come out hard, and then, you know, they'll just run out of gas because they're just so dogged in the way that they play the game. But
fairly appropriate. I mean, when they were slumping into the All-Star break and afterwards, it looked like they maybe ran out of gas. And
I had written a number of articles looking at the strength of schedules for like the remaining four teams who were fighting for three playoff spots. And between Washington and Florida, I always kind of assumed that Washington would eventually catch them and surpass them in the standings. And then you realize, like, you know, every time you're waiting for Washington to take the next step, they fall flat. Like last night against Tampa Bay, they're coming off two games in which they've shot more than 40 shots on net. And then boom.
That Florida team, man, like, I know the Senators beat up on them a lot, but man, they look like crap.
I looked at the record against teams that weren't in the Southeast Division, and it's not that impressive.
Like, there's just something about them. Like, they're a decent hockey club. They should probably be in the playoff picture. I mean, if Ottawa is sure as hell,
what I noticed,
the Panthers should be.
When I had the chance to watch them earlier this season live, I noticed that they played really, really, really hard for Kevin Dineen. And I don't know, maybe this is the same excuse that McKeon's was using for the Senators. Maybe they're just starting to run out of gas a little bit and they don't have the horses.
But it's kind of a veteran-laden squad, too. I mean, these guys know how to play and how to pace themselves over an entire season. They understand the rigors. It's not like the Senators, where they have all these kids who have played so much friggin' hockey in the past year and who aren't really acclimatized to it, right? Like, how long is the NCAA hockey season?
How long can you keep trotting Scott Clemenson and José Théodore out there on a night? Like,
Ugly. That was ugly. It's almost as ugly as watching Reimer and Gustafson bump arms last night. That was pathetic. That was fantastic to watch.
Yeah. Switching gears, now that we've talked about awards and the rest, I guess the one thing that we have to look forward to over the course of the next week and a half, is the NHL trade deadline. A number of shitty veteran defensemen are being put on the market, and they are going for second-round picks and something.
So let's talk about this. Are defensemen that in demand? Is there that shortage?
I was joking with Creech on Thursday. When Andy Sutton is regarded as one of the best commodities as we approach the deadline, that tells you something.
Absolutely, it does. Depth is absolutely essential.
And as we've seen a number of GMs say, like David Poile after the Hal Gill trade, he's like, well, I just didn't see a lot of sellers out there. So, you know, you make that aggressive move to get the guy that you've targeted and then don't worry about it, kind of thing. But, like, you wonder if Ottawa would be inclined to listen to offers for Filip Kubo and Sergei Gonchar.
Well, you live in a nice house. It's a decent house. You're okay with it. All of a sudden, your block goes up in property value, and you're like, well, I wasn't thinking about moving, but I'd be dumb not to at this point in selling it.
Yeah.
I mean, why not, right?
Do you jeopardize success? Do you see either of those two as key, significant cogs on Ottawa's blue line?
They'd be hard to replace at this point in the season.
You have to replace them in the next season anyways.
And you're going to have to replace them anyways, right, in the offseason. But, I mean, if this team is going to be a playoff team, which it looks like they are, what?
70% chance, according to sportsclubstats.com.
And the way they've played certainly hasn't led us to believe they won't be. But at the very least, like, what are you going to do? Like, there's no one really in Binghamton who's ready to make that jump. I mean, those are veteran guys.
Or anyone who profiles as a three or a four defenseman, which Kubin and Gonchar are probably at this stage of their career.
Yeah. But
on a good team.
I think Kuba is probably harder to replace because of his defensive awareness and his big body size in the playoffs than Gonchar is. Gonchar might be tougher to move because he's got that 1 year afterwards, and he hasn't exactly been...
The timing of Jared Cowan's regression is a bit disconcerting, because if that guy was playing well, I think you could probably justify the decision to move Kuba more than you could now that Cowan's on the third pairing, not really playing particularly well.
It'd be a lot easier to stomach if Patty Weir-Kosh was actually looking like he was going to be the prospect we all thought he could be.
He still could
this year.
I think it's way too easy to write that kid off.
But after the injury, I mean, I'm saying if they traded Kuba or Gonchar for, you know, what I'm going to call future considerations, but as in a draft pick or a prospect who's not ready to make the jump to the NHL yet, then you could very easily graduate a guy like Weir-Kosh or Borowiecki into the lineup and say, okay, well, we've got our defensive stay-at-home defenseman and we've got our skater here. to essentially replace it. Yeah, it's probably a downgrade in skill and obviously a huge downgrade in experience. And it's a big gamble, but you could do it, right? Especially if this, if Brian Murray believes this team.
Can you sell that? Can you sell that to the guys within that room, though, on the coaching staff?
Probably not.
That's the
kicker,
right?
And that's the one thing you keep hearing Brian Murray say is it's not about him. It's about doing it for the guys in the room who have gotten themselves to that point. And I know that there is a massive sentiment in Ottawa to win now with Alfie, right? Like, people want to give Alfie this chance. And it's going to be
It's a delicate balance. It is. It's such a delicate balance between it. Like, what is the worth of advancing one round to you? Is that the cost of a second round pick?
Like, Ottawa has so many prospects too. But again, there's not really
That quality on the blue line, to be honest.
And there's not really like the blue chip. Like, there's a lot of good prospects in Ottawa's system.
No one's can't miss.
But yeah, no one's a can't miss player. And if they were, they'd probably be playing right now, right? So it's just really hard to figure out what to do with this quantity of players. Like, do you just graduate them all and hope that they eventually compete for spots and weed themselves out and make it easy for you to see who's going to be, you know, a core player moving forward, right? It's just really hard. I'm sure that they've identified after this year, you know, who's going to be a gamer. And you've got, and yet then even making things even more difficult is guys like Matt Pumple have lost a ton of value, at least on the trade market, maybe not internally, but because of these issues. So all of a sudden you're down kind of one of your higher end prospects, right? Anytime you lose a former first round pick to these injury problems, it's going to be difficult. And they graduated so many guys already from that last kind of, you know, draft class.
So here's a question to you. I asked this to Chris.
Sorry, I'm rambling. But
No. It's good. It's good, thoughtful discussion, and it's well reasoned. The question I posed to Creech is, if you can get a first round pick or a second round pick plus a few prospects for Philip Kuba, and maybe you're not trading this for this quantity just to get it in the system, but you use that quantity to move it in the offseason to bring in the younger guys who can supplement what you're doing now. Can't you justify that to some level?
I think you could.
Especially if you project a play like the Boston Bruins in the first round.
But that's so hard though, right? Because that requires a crystal ball to see that you're going to be playing Boston in the first round. Mm-hmm. And even then, right? Like, I hate to jump on the Melnick, you know, line of thought here, but it's true. Like, anything can happen in the playoffs, right? Like,
I hate that sentence.
It's true though. And I mean, obviously you don't want to, you know, build your team around that and just gun for the 7-8 spot year after year and hope that, you know, luck is on your side and, you know, you throw off a few bookies along the way. But I think what might be more reasonable to do is if you realize that you can get a really good return on a guy like Philip Kuba, and like you said, whatever package that may entail, a first round and whatever else coming back, maybe then you realize, okay, I've got two first-round picks this year. They're both going to be, you know, 15 to, you know, 29, 30th, whatever it may be. Perhaps you turn around and you say, okay, well, I'm going to make another trade here and bring another defenseman, maybe like an NHL defenseman, like another rental. And, you know, maybe you don't pay the same price for them and you are able to recoup that first-round pick and you just end up unloading some other players and maybe, you know, a couple prospects or two who you think maybe have fallen on the depth chart. Maybe that's what it's going to be. Maybe it's not about one trade. Maybe it's about
a few, a succession of trades.
The big picture. Like, we've talked about the rebuild not being about one or two moves here and there. Obviously, that all contributes. But at the end of the day, it's about what the final product is like on the ice. Like, and it's going to be so hard to judge it. Maybe that's just part of it here. You make one move, like, you know, two steps forward, one step back kind of thing.
Well, it's like Stefan DaCosta is penciled in tentatively as a second-line center to start the season. Kyle Turris comes in. All right. Where does Stefan DaCosta fit with his team moving forward? Is he he's kind of in like that Andre Peterson mold where he could just be one of those undersized wingers.
He's a talented...
But is he a guy you could possibly dangle for a young defenseman?
He's an offensive center who's, again, got that knock on being undersized. You know, no one knows how these NCAA kids are going to do under a full rigor. Look at Bozak, right? He's just finally getting it. He's a trade chip at this point. I mean, the Senators are so stacked at center. Zach Smith offensive abilities. I mean, we talked about this last year a lot when they were making their Calder Cup run and what an offensive stud he was. He was like a 20-some goal scorer in bingo, and he's doing it in the NHL now. I mean, he...
Yeah, his offensive prowess was understated. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
But they've got, you know, Spezza, Turris, Mika, Zach Smith, Chris Neal, DaCosta. Help me
Chris
out.
Chris Neal.
He can play center.
What the fuck?
Kanopka.
Kanopka. Yeah, Kanopka. But he's not going to be around. Jesse Winchester probably won't be around moving forward.
Jesse Winchester's. Yeah.
I feel bad for him, too.
It's rough, but that's the nature of the beast, right? I mean, he had his chance. If he was really that valuable to the team, then he would still be able to find himself.
And Jimmy O'Brien actually has utility.
What a noise that was. That was me banging my head on the table. Jimmy O'Brien. Unbelievable, eh? He looks like a hockey player.
I was thinking of you when he scored his first goal. Oh. I could have seen you at home in your living room just doing one of those windmill fist pumps on the ice.
I was so happy to see them go over and grab that puck out of the net, too. I think it was Neil or Foligno. One of the two went over and grabbed it. What a brilliant moment for Jim O'Brien. I was watching that game on Game Center on that broadcast, which everyone seemed to enjoy talking about at length. But anyways, just so fitting that Jim O'Brien, this castaway muckler clone, scores his first goal on the big screen in Florida when 30 people are watching, including one of our good buddies who was down there, who was just having the time of his life at the game.
Yeah.
Had a section to himself, really loved it, paid 20-some bucks for seats.
That's unbelievable.
But Jim O'Brien, what a guy.
He can say he was there for it, too.
Yep.
I was there for Jim O'Brien's first NHL goal.
That's something you want recited at your funeral. Right? You know, like that's it's not quite epitaph worthy, but it's certainly, you know, half in the bag speech worthy. You can only say you've been there for so much, right?
No, that's true too. That is true too. Yeah. Ottawa does have a lot of depth at center though.
But I'm just happy to see Jim O'Brien working his ass off. He's noticeable on every single shift.
I think the part of the Jim O'Brien story that I like the most is that I think as a fan base, and like I think the media helps contribute to this a little bit as well, is that we have like such a linear expectations for how these prospects should develop. And if a guy has, you know, he struggles in development in his first season, we're like, oh, he's a bust. We're so quick to throw out those labels and just say, oh, he's a trade ship. Like, he's not progressing the way that they want to. Not everybody it has linear projections.
Yep.
And it's taken Jim O'Brien a while to find his niche at what he's going to be as a professional hockey player.
Because he was a goal scorer everywhere, right?
Yeah.
He was a goal scorer in Seattle.
Yep. And his game's developed. He's become a very efficient two-way player.
And he's tough. Like, he took a couple really big hits in that Florida game. The guy just plays. Like, he just goes, right? He's got a good motor. He's not the most beautiful skater. He reminds me, you know, everyone always says Bruce Gardner was so fast, but he had such an ugly skating style, right? And at least in my eyes. And Jim O'Brien, he's just a good lunch pail guy. Big fan. And I love that nose.
You love the nose? I love the hair.
Yeah, the nose, the hair. Yeah, brilliant. Like, him and Kanopka together, some big noses.
It's a likable team. It's a very likable team.
It is. They make you smile every once in a while. Sometimes they make you cry. But it's been absolutely a pleasure to watch this team so far this year. It's been great.
So what do you anticipate this team doing as we get towards the NHL trade deadline?
If Murray sees something he likes, he's going to do it, right? I mean, obviously he wasn't afraid to pull the trigger on Turris, which now looks like an absolute genius move. We were just looking at the stats. Bingo played Portland? Is that the team?
Portland Pirates, yeah.
Yeah, they played last night. Rundblad got kicked out of the game for boarding and was a -2 before he managed to do that. You know, that was brilliant move. So if he can do something like that again, I think if he can acquire a young player who he sees as a piece moving forward, then you do it. Like Stewart in St. Louis.
I heard he's a dog fucker.
Really? Where'd you hear that from? Release your sources.
No.
He didn't play like a dog fucker in Colorado.
I just heard he's very
dog fucker-esque.
Yeah, he's just lazy.
Sure. You've got laziness doesn't get people to the NHL.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. Fine.
Anyways,
unless he's just relying on crazy innate talent.
I'm just saying that kind of guy. Like, you know, like your, you know, proverbial 20-something you know, guy who's maybe been misused a little bit before.
Maturity's in question, maybe. Yeah,
the Anthopoulos thing, right? You know, like, could he be our Cole Erasmus?
This is like the Daryl Sutter, like, criticizing Dustin Penner, saying he's horse shit.
I love these Penner to Ottawa rumors. I love them.
Do you?
Oh, they're dear. What are people like? It's like the worse he gets, like the more unproductive he is, and the further he comes or he falls from his glory days on his entry-level contract in Edmonton, the more Senators fans clamor towards the guy, thinking he can be this power forward. Right?
Jonathan Chichu could have been that guy.
Colin Greening could be that guy. Right? I mean, we were talking about this off air. There's a guy who, in your mind, apparently you can elaborate on this if you want. He could be moved. Right?
Well, I think heading into the offseason, if Ottawa was serious about taking that next step in their goal towards a Stanley Cup contending team, is that they're going to have to upgrade one of their wingers that they're using in the top nine to that top six level. I don't necessarily think Milan McCulloch's a first line guy. I don't think Nick Foligno is a first or second line guy. I don't think Colin Greening is a first or second line guy. I don't think Eric Condra, even, well, he can play in like limited, all of them can play in like limited stints, but.
And Alfie even more in a.
Yeah. But none of those guys really, I don't know. Who do you think is the most replaceable out of those three? I'd probably say Colin Greening is the worst player out of all of those three.
Absolutely. And again, he's 25 years old. He's only got, like, sure, we'll give him. He had games last year. He's had this full season under his belt. Maybe in, like, a year or two, we're going to see his peak. But then he's going to be pushing 30, right?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Some guys take longer to develop. As long as he's cost-effective, I think that's the biggest thing.
Exactly. And he's got, you know, he's on a palatable contract right now for what he provides. But at some point, who's the odd man out?
Yeah, one of them.
And eventually, and there will come a day when Daniel Alfredsson, like if he does come back next year, that's great. I mean, pencil him in on the second line again, but be prepared for him to play, you know, on third line minutes at least, right?
Right.
Maybe you have a little more
but
talent.
He's another guy, right? Like he's not going to play maybe 2 years from now. He might play next year.
Yeah.
There's a 50-50 chance he's playing next year. I assume he's coming back.
Based on what, I get that impression
too. But
like
too. As the team gets better, is the team going to take a step back when he retires? Like, how do you replace a guy who can put up close to a point per game production even at his age?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's true. I mean, he's, what, 20 goals again this year?
Yeah.
Probably end up with 25 or so.
Yeah.
It's big shoes to fill. I mean, you're not going to get, like, you know, maybe we have high hopes for guys like Mark Stone or whatever, or Stefan Nason. But Pumple's going to need to go back to junior again next year. There's no question about it. You can't just say, oh, well, you know, forget the injuries. We'll graduate you to Bingo anyways or Elmira and see how you do. No, that's not. You know, he's got to go back, prove himself in the
As an overager?
What else are you going to do after he's missed this whole year?
Oh, you'll play him in Binghamton. They'll want to develop him himself. That's the whole...
But wouldn't you say this is kind of another missed year of development for him?
Yeah, I don't know how many games he's played then.
32 games, I think.
Out of 48 or something?
Yeah, he's been out of action since.
He was suspended for a number of games
He was suspended, then he got the concussion. He's been out for a long time.
Yeah.
I think at least since January.
Yeah.
But anyways, like Nason maybe, but is he going to be a 25-goal scorer? No, probably not right off the bat.
No, he was another one of those tweeners who was like a second, third line. They can't really project him quite well.
Is Mika, like everything we know about Mika, which is obviously, you know, we've heard a lot about him. His ceiling might be 30 goals. Can we pencil in a rookie for 25 goals?
No,
or a
first year, or
second year player? Maybe not. It's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard. Kyle Turris might take that extra step and become a 30-35 goal scorer, right? It's entirely possible. Every time I watch him on the ice, I'm reminded of a young Jason Spezza.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a vision to him. I like his shot. Obviously, he's got a great release, but he's got more vision than I think more people gave him credit for.
He plays a lot harder than I didn't watch a lot of Coyotes games.
Right.
I don't think anyone did in their
but
right
too
mind.
Small. Like that, the problem with Turris is he just needs to get a little bit.
But he's good with
stronger
the stick,
on
though.
His skates.
He's
yeah.
good with the stick. Like he's yeah. half decent along the boards. Like even when he's battling against big defensemen.
But he gets bumped off the puck very easily.
Yeah, but he can still be like he's still a very effective offensive player despite yeah. his
Short
size.
Runners, yeah. yeah.
Anyways, lots of centers. Good thing to have.
Well, that's where you want to be.
But and especially, like, the idea of trading DaCosta now, like, he's back, he's playing decent in Bingo. Maybe his trade value is at an all-time high, you know, before he actually gets into the NHL and people see that he's, you know, maybe not as good as expected or as advertised.
But this is, yeah, if you're looking at Ottawa's depth chart, I think he's probably, you know, he's down a few rungs on the depth chart. Now you have guys like Silverberg, possibly Stone even, who are close to making that jump as well.
That's right.
Do they pass those guys? Like, how do those guys slot in, especially with the top nine that Ottawa has on their roster right now? You don't have room for all of those guys.
Zilferberg will probably play. Like, we know when he will make the team next year, barring anything crazy, right? And we know he's going to be third line for sure, second line up to him, right? He's killing it in the Swedish Elite League right now.
Right.
He's had all the development time he needs. He's got a great shot. Smart guy. Perhaps he's our answer.
Maybe.
Let's put all those eggs in that basket. Let's see.
Yeah. But I mean, if you can get, I think maybe if you can trade some of that quantity with a prospect, and you might be able to bring in a guy who can actually contribute and play on Jason Spezza's wing. Because if that guy had some talent to play with on a regular basis, like, I'd like to see what Jason's numbers could be.
Yeah. Like, I, you know, perhaps you hate the getting to the playoffs and anything can happen sentiment. And I'm sick of the, he makes players around him better.
I'd like to see the sentiments. Power play be better.
Yeah.
I think that's where you get a chance to see Jason's vision a little bit better. Right now, it just kind of seems like it's him and Carlson feeding off of each other. And Alfredson's usually been on the second unit. So you're not really seeing Ottawa's best offensive players playing together all the time. Like, Spets has been out there a lot of the time with guys like Chris Neal, Colin Greening, Milan Mikolic. And it's just...
Foligno's seen some time.
Yeah, I'd rather see Foligno out there than Neal, to be honest. But I'd like to see Jason get the chance to work with a little bit better talent that he could actually hopefully grow. Maybe Mark Stone will be that guy.
Perhaps big body, put him in the
soft
slot.
Soft hands.
Backdoor pass, right?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Maybe he's another Danny Heatley in the mix.
Let's hold him to that standard.
Yes, good stuff.
Anyways, I think to summarize all of this, great problems to have in Ottawa right now. They may all be problems, but they are great ones to have. And it's good that we are able to actually discuss options within the organization as opposed to looking around and shopping around the free agent class or, you know, hoping to hell that we're going to grab a player that we really need in the draft this year.
Oh, it's a fun time to be a fan because there are so many scenarios and different situations in which you could actually place this team. Like, oh, is it a seller? Is it a buyer at the deadline? All right, looking forward to this offseason. What do? You have all these bodies who are close to NHL ready, if they're not already. And... tough decisions are going to have to be made.
I haven't been on the show in a while, but when was the last time, going back to Mark Stone, that we had a player on the World Junior team who figured prominently in the success of the World Junior Championship since Mark Stone? Like, that was just
You're
amazing.
For Canada, though.
For Canada, yeah.
Probably Redden, because I don't think Phillips was even playing that very often. Yeah, I think he was like a bottom pairing guy.
Daig played.
Cowan was bottom pairing. He was scratched for a Swiss game.
Daig won a gold.
Yeah, Daig played a prominent role, but he preceded Redden, obviously.
Yeah.
Cody Bass was on a team, was he not?
Shoot, I hope not. I don't know. We might have to look that up.
Yeah.
But obviously, and then, you know, even though Canada didn't win, even better, like, the storyline didn't end there when Mika came in and scored that beauty, right?
Yeah.
So it's just great to see these players on a national...
And Clayson look good as well.
International level. You know, the future looks great in Ottawa. I mean... all those damn prospect rankings that people fist pump at home when they read them.
They have a lot of depth. I'd like to see them maybe get a little bit more that high-end skill because I think that's the one thing that the system currently lacks.
Yeah.
I think David Rundblad had some of that offensive skills, but the rest of his game kind of...
shaky.
Yeah, but he was a project player, and I don't think Ottawa has that can't-miss guy who you can hit an actual home run with than a number of the other top minor league guys.
Or a,
not like
Yakupov.
A Huberto or like, yeah.
Sure.
But anyways, moving on. A few things were mentioned today in the newspapers. Apparently, according to Garriott, Brian Murray might listen to offers on Gonchar and Kuba. Another thing that was kicked around today is the possibility of a Rick Nash trade in Ottawa. And if you want a sobering reminder of what it would cost to bring in a Rick Nash to Ottawa, it is a Robin Lehner.
Just to be clear, go on.
Okay, he was just talking to a league executive, and then the league executive hypothesized, this is, I don't even know if Ottawa's actually even had negotiations with Columbus to see what it would take to get him. But he threw out the idea of Robin Lehner, Mark Stone, two first-round picks.
Brutal. Got high expectations. We know how well him and Spezza play together, right? Playing against the best of the hockey world who also didn't make the NHL playoffs.
Do you have any deadline predictions?
Nick Kyprios wears toque and talks a lot.
It'll be interesting to see how they milk this deadline. Because there's not a lot to talk about, especially with some of the trades happening now, right? Like Hal Gill, Pavel Kabina. If those are like the biggest pieces.
Rutu's injured. Who knows if he was even going to be dealt.
Is the Rick Nash trade even going to happen before the deadline? I know it's been a PR disaster from the standpoint of Columbus in terms of listening to offers.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't even know what to expect. I think it'll be a dud deadline based on what we've heard and the names available. I mean, it's just scrub players back and forth. It looks like
Dominic
be a lot of,
Moore can't be moved.
Like, it's going to be all depth moves.
They don't
right?
even have Dominic Moore to go to.
And how exciting is that, right?
Are you a bit surprised at how often Dominic Moore gets moved for a second round pick? Can you think of like a worse player who's brought in some pieces?
Matt Cullen?
Mike Sillinger?
Oh, that's right. Sillinger was always packing his bags.
Yeah. Once to Ottawa at a deadline, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't
Similar
know.
Similar kind of players, though. Like decent defensively inclined players who can contribute a little bit on offense. Decent on the draw.
Yeah. I don't know. Comrie?
Comrie. Poor Mike Comrie. Is there...
Poor Mike Comrie. Fuck Mike Comrie. Last thing in the world is he is poor in any respect in his life. Kidding me? Home life, now he's selling couches. Wearing diamonds. Prick. Mike Comrie. Give me a break. Who retires mid-season?
Is there a playoff matchup that you're actually looking forward to? Prospective playoff opponent for the Ottawa Senators, I should say.
I was telling you earlier, I'm salivating about the opportunity to maybe play Florida at some point in the playoffs. That would be fantastic.
Do you think sixth place in the Eastern Conference is a spot that's worth, or it's even possible?
It might be hard the way the Senators are shaping up. It's so hard right now to look at the standings.
Because they're inflated. The numbers have been inflated for like the past month and a half, 2 months.
It's really difficult to look at that, but based on, like, I haven't run numbers on it or anything, just from a casual observer, it looks like six might be, like seven, eight is probably where we're going to end up. One or the other. Boston is the only team I really fear going into the playoffs. I'd be okay with rolling the dice against anyone else in the East and seeing what happens. Like, I don't really have high expectations for this team into the playoffs. If they make it past the first round, that would be incredible. It means money in the bank, especially considering the like the salary they have this
year.
And
the new scoreboard and the
like,
rest of it.
It would be nice for the organization to make a bit of money off a low investment this year. Like, I think that would be really good. I think that'd be a nice reward. Maybe the Senators have had it hard over the past few years, and obviously you should never have sympathy for, you know, multi-million dollar corporations, but you know, it's good. It just ensures
that's good
it,
business.
Yeah, keeps the team around, you know, keeps those questions out of the Fan 590 conversation, blah blah blah. But yeah, if they do it, so be it. Even like we said, the Rangers, I wouldn't be opposed to facing them.
Because that's the reality of the situation, is they're probably going to be playing the Rangers, Boston, or Washington. The Florida-Washington matchup. Yeah. Or Winnipeg.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be great. That'd be good. CBC would like it. I would like it. The only people who wouldn't like it are the Senators, because they have to go to Winnipeg. At least twice. Yeah, the Jets. But no, I just...
The Binghamton of Canada. That's what you're trying to say?
More or less. More or less. Let's just call it, like, I don't know, like the Lindsay, Ontario of New York.
Oh, brutal. Brutal.
Yeah.
Besides the playoffs, there's only really one other thing to be looking forward to.
Which is?
The Erik Karlsson Norm McIver record.
Oh, so great. I love hearing Norm McIver's name back in the discussion again.
We should try and have him back on the show.
He'll do it.
If like the record falls, just get him on.
I hope they have a ceremony for it, like the game after they bring Norm in. Is he still a scout?
I think he was the director of player development for Chicago, I believe.
Yeah, at one point, yeah. Anyways.
You see him in a lot of number of their functions. I think he's becoming way more prominent than... maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just because you have him on the show and then you see him in a number of these other capacities and you're like... Weird.
But it would be great if, you know, he came in and like...
Well, he was here earlier in the year too.
Handed over like a sweet plaque or like an equally...
Hand him his visor from like the first year. That's like...
That'd be great. Or his jock or something. Or, you know, I think even worse than getting his jock would be getting a painting similar to that piece of shit that Chris Phillips received.
Oh, you didn't like that?
Oh, horrible.
It was a weird angle.
Clearing the crease away from all these greats. I mean, terrible.
Like, yeah, it was a weird shot.
Like, why not just get a Getty image photo of him, like, I don't know.
Well, that's what it looked like.
It was just terrible. Like, it was a painting, though, right?
Yeah.
I don't, like, what do you do? It was massive, right? Like, it would, I think I'd rather have the Kobe Bryant image of him with, like on the Matador.
Yeah.
Over his bed than that.
Wasn't that A-Rod?
Was it?
I think it was A-Rod.
That's right, it was. Madonna was going on about it. She wouldn't confirm it. Anyways, that painting was terrible. I mean, what an insult. You know, here's some terrible art that's not only massive, but you also feel compelled to hang on your wall.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe if you had, like...
That was a fun event to be at, though.
I'm sure it was. Chris Phillips, hockey player, hockey skills aside, obviously he's been a good guy around Ottawa. There's all those stories.
His charitable endeavors, yeah.
About what an actually good person he is off the ice, like a genuinely good person, like the kind of guy that you'd want your sister to date
if
he didn't play hockey.
And you're always reminded of him owning that suede bar in the Canada Centrum that you'd always walk by and laugh at the people who are like lingering in behind the velvet rope.
The underage puck bunnies kind of checking their IDs to make sure you can't see the eraser marks on the birth date.
And you see like Dominic Hasek with like five girls on his arms as he's walking.
Apparently he's opening a brew pub.
Yeah, Green Bank at Iris.
Yeah.
Close to the IKEA, yeah.
IKEA Centrum.
Yeah.
Good for him. That's great. That's awesome.
He's going to have a microbrewery, yeah.
Hopefully it's not a...
He's going to have a beer called the Big Rig.
Yeah, that's great. Sure. I think that's a great endeavor. Hopefully it works out well for him.
Hopefully it tastes good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he wants to stay in Ottawa for a bit. Or at least, I don't know, lifespans of restaurants in Ottawa aren't exactly the best. Unless they're a big box, so... So anyways, yeah, enough about the beer stuff. Phillips, great night. Those two goals, unbelievable. Watching that at home, like, it was such a... I called my old man afterwards and was like, you know, what a great couple weeks for the Senators here. The Alfie thing at the All-Star game was unbelievable. Like, that whole weekend was great. Mm-hmm. I especially loved those the chirpers at the All-Star draft. My brother got last-minute tickets and that were released right close to the draft and ended up with some terrible seats underneath a microphone boom in front of Team Chera. And I guess from what he was saying, it was like a group of like 20 guys or whatever who were just wasted yelling out all that stuff. And it was just great to hear all that stuff on television and to see the Ottawa pride and to see the respect that the Ottawa hockey team, seeing Phil Kessel just being the most uncomfortable individual on earth, like... How that guy, like, he looks cross-eyed, but he's got such great vision on the ice. It's a miracle of modern science. Like, the guy should be dropping bombs, you know, or flying jet planes or, you know, being a sharpshooter. He looks like just unbelievable, eh? It's like Deliverance and with a hockey stick. But, yeah, we weren't going to talk about that, but we did. But then, and then, anyways, the Alfie chance at the game, it was such a great televised event. Normally, I hate the All-Star game, and I probably won't watch it next year in Columbus because I'm not sure if I can see RJ Umberger receive the same reception, you know. But anyways, great few weeks for Ottawa. Hopefully, this season carries on in the same way, and we have something else to cheer about. Hopefully, Jim O'Brien nets a few more. That'll make my day. And
it's been a fun run. Lots of like heralded heroes and different characters throughout the course of the year. It's everything that you actually could have wanted from a team.
Yep. So before I don't talk to you guys again in the near future for the end of the season, what do we think going into the playoffs? What's your prediction for the year end here?
Prediction for the year end? Ottawa stands pat at the deadline. They don't do anything. And I expect some significant moves coming this offseason. And playoffs, I think Ottawa will make it to the first round. That's it.
Okay, I'll go something different. I'll go second, third tier prospects, like a Weirkosh kind of guy, whatever. Someone playing in bingo right now, whatever, something to that extent, being traded for an NHL roster player, a rosterable player, if you will, who can step in and contribute. That's a rental. And playoffs, I'm going to go three rounds.
Three rounds.
I'm going to go three rounds.
Eastern Conference Finals.
I called Eastern Conference Finals last year when we tanked, and I'm going to go for it again this year and hope to hell that I'm right.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to pull a lightning in a bottle card here.
Well,
I'm in a sentimental mood right now.
If they wind up with Florida or a Washington or a Winnipeg first round, yeah, sure.
Or if they make it, or if, you know, inconceivably, if they are able to beat out a team like Boston in
the first round. Like, I think you'd have to play at Boston third round or later.
Then what's stopping them, right? Like, eventually you're going to have to go through a big team. If you do it early, there's one less opponent there, right? You take that seed, you're great.
Yep.
You're rocking.
We've seen teams like Carolina do that before.
Yep. And Craig Anderson, we've seen enough of him this year already.
Yeah, if he gets hot.
He gets hot, right? He gets hot, and they're sure as hell not going to play Ald. And they're sure as hell not going to bring Lehner up because then Pedersen's going to, you know, fly back to Sweden.
It'll be a package deal. They call him up at the same time.
Yeah, you can just sit in the press box with Brian Lee and Butler and Winchester.
Those guys will be around for the playoff run, though. It'll be interesting to see.
Yep, they will. Yep, all those guys will get the call because Bengo's certainly not going anywhere.
No, not at all.
And it means Francis Lessard won't be coming up at the end of the year. No more burying him. He needs to go play on that KHL team with Morasti and that other goon.
Oh, I heard that organization's going to fold at the end of the year.
Well, if there's a transfer window there, he should be calling his agent. What a joke.
Anyways.
Good luck on this one. Nice talking to everyone again.
Yeah, dude, thanks for jumping in on short notice. And it's nice to have you in the box. It's always fun to talk. You're always passionate. You bring it. So why not?
Want to give a special shout out to our friend Danny Heatley Speedwagon. Picture me now. Picture the voice.
Oh, yeah. I met him, actually.
I know. I heard.
For the All-Star weekend. Yeah, nice guy.
I heard the voice matches the drapes.
Voice. You're talking about me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him? I don't know.
Too special. Anyways, Sunday afternoon. You want to go to the brew pub?
Let's go to the brew pub.
We're going to the Mill Street Brewery.
There we go. One.
Yeah. So let's do it. We haven't been, so let's go check it out.
Sounds good to me.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. Tim, thanks for coming in. I hope you enjoy your trip.
Thank
you
very much.
You're going to be out for a while. So.
I am. Business takes me far away.
Yeah, no kidding. But congrats on the endeavor.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
On to greener pastures.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. Thanks, guys.
Punch in the face, I never felt so alive since 1999. The time when we got it all out.